Hello and welcome to another episode of the SIRS Group podcast. I'm JC.
And I'm Barbara.
And today we are talking about SIRS hard versus easy mode. So in the group, we very often get asked, especially in our group calls when people can ask questions to the group and get feedback. We talk about this concept of easy versus hard mode with SIRS, meaning there are lifestyle decisions you can make that make managing SIRS a little bit easier, but that's always going to be balanced by whatever the harder choice might give you in another area of fulfillment. So we'll go into specific examples and stuff like that. But before we jump in, just a reminder, we are not medical professionals. We are SIRS patients. We've read the SIRS textbook. We have a group of people healing from SIRS. And that's it. We're not medical professionals. So if you're looking for medical advice, Glass Care Provider.
There you go. Yeah, and a lot of these easy versus hard is kind of like it's all on a spectrum too, right? Like there's like ideal over here and not ideal, detrimental, I guess. And there's all of these options in between. And so I think people and even some practitioners have this level of perfection that they're striving for and they want for their clients and or patients, and that's noble and appropriate given what we know about the healing process. However, real life, you need to have some room for real life in all of that. So I hope that these comparisons don't label anything as bad or good, but really just help you decide for yourself what is doable, what's sustainable for you while you're healing to hopefully reap as m much of the benefits as possible while still maintaining some semblance of your normal life with all of your happiest interests intact.
Yeah, so to start with our favorite segment, Shit Talking Florida.
Poor Florida. I mean, people have a complex now. Like on the group calls, they're like, "So I live in Florida." Like it's fine. We get it. It's not easy to actually move, but people know how we feel.
But also, like, Florida is beautiful.
It
Like,
is.
especially if you live on the coast and Orlando's super fun. Like it's a cool state. It's cool. So the point in saying this is that living in Florida or a more humid environment, we should say, we shouldn't specify this to Florida. It really is a
Yeah,
general
it's really the
recommendation.
entire eastern seaboard and the south. I mean,
Maybe the Pacific Northwest,
yeah,
you
that's
know,
also
like
not super great. Yep.
places that are more humid, it's going to be more difficult to manage mold in your home. So we know that 40% relative humidity is the gold standard. 40% or lower relative humidity inside your house is ideal for SIRS patients. And then anything, like Barbara was saying, less than or more than that is less ideal. So when you live in a humid climate, there's a lot more management that needs to be done there in terms of making sure that your house stays below that level, your car stays below that level. And if you choose to live in a drier climate, it becomes a lot easier to manage because you're not then having to add this layer of humidity management on top of your, normal house management, making sure you put alarms near any sort of water pipes that might leak. There's all of that we already have to consider. So living in a humid environment just adds that extra layer. Personally, I live in Colorado and I have like a humidifier next to my bed because otherwise my skin is too dry. Like it's that dry that I can have that and feel safe having that. So this is just a consideration to have. If you're looking at moving, maybe consider a location that's going to be a little bit easier to manage.
Right. And I'll even take it a slightly further extreme. And I think this is why we end up picking on Florida so much is the prevalence of hurricanes. Because that's beyond just humidity. That is actual water moving into your home and oftentimes sitting there. And in some cases for days. I think it was like Hurricane Sally relatively recently. The storm was so slow moving, water just sat in homes for like 3 days straight. So there's nothing you can do. You can't dry that out. So I think that's where, at the very least, if you are going to live in a more humid place, if you can avoid something that's so coastal, or in one of those areas where that kind of flooding happens, that's a pretty big red flag. And to be fair, the drier climates can get that kind of flooding too, because the land is so not used to being rained upon that there are parts of Arizona and Nevada and Colorado that do flood in pretty severe cases. So you want to get a history of the area, whether or not that area has experienced that sort of thing. That's something you may want to add to your list of research if you are thinking about relocating to a new, drier climate.
Move on top of a hill.
Yeah, I am thankful. My home, I live in Las Vegas, again, very dry, but prone to flooding. Thankfully, I am on a slant, a hill. I really am. And my home is built on a slab as well. So I have a lot of things going for me. When we do get a lot of rain, it just, all the water I see rushing by,
Thanks to
nothing
your
gets,
neighbors.
yeah. Thankfully, I think at the bottom of the hill is a gas station. That sounds safe. But anyway, yeah, it just keep those things in mind when you're picking where you live, if you can.
And that said, we do have a member in our group, and her lifelong dream was like to live on the beach. And she lives on the beach. She's fully healed from SIRS. She keeps getting re-exposed, and she's just fine with that. She's fine with the management that comes with that because she is literally living her lifelong dream of living on a beach. And so, again, this isn't to say this is good or this is bad. It's just giving you that discussion around the consideration of making a choice that's going to make managing SIRS easier or harder.
Exactly.
Which leads me into our next one and the inspiration for this episode. So in your the actual interior of your home, we know that a lot of people with SIRS are sensitive to mycotoxins, endotoxins, and actinomycetes, which are the bacteria that eat mold but also dead skin. And so a big part of SIRS management for a lot of SIRS patients is frequent cleaning. And if we know we have to clean frequently, it might be helpful to consider a more minimalist environment in your home versus if you have a more maximalist decor. You know, if you have to dust a couple times a week and you have a bunch of trinkets, tchotchkes, whatever you would like to call them, up in your house, like you're going to have to move all of those. You're going to have to dust the actual trinket, you're going to have to dust under it. It just adds a layer of difficulty to that. My grandma has collected frogs her entire life, and she has a substantial frog collection. And it gives her joy. And I could just see her making the choice of keeping all of her frogs and dealing with having to do the extra dusting, and that would be worth it for her.
Right. And there are again those middle ground areas you can explore. You can buy a cabinet with glass doors on the front that can keep those items protected, so you're mostly just dusting the outside. And so there's certain things you can do. You can go somewhere in between minimalist and maximalist. Wow, that was difficult to say. And have some of your most important items and have them out, which is kind of what I do. I only have a couple little things. I used to have a lot more. So there's things you can do towards that. But at the same time, like you said, some people care a lot about how their environment looks, and all of the things in it have sentimental value. So that is where you have to make that call for yourself. If the dusting that is required to keep your home as clean as possible is worth that, to have that wonderful environment that you've surrounded yourself with, by all means, it's just your choice of hard.
And that's another consideration too, because I moved from Florida to Colorado and I only had the things I took in a carry-on suitcase because I was supposed to be dog sitting. And then I felt so much better in Colorado. I was like, I'm staying. So when it came time to consider bringing some of my stuff from Florida to Colorado, the consideration was, okay, anything I'm bringing from the Florida house to the Colorado house might be contaminated. So what is worth it to me? Worth it to me? Like, what would I actually want to bring back into this environment? And so if you are doing remediation or you are moving to a new location, you might have to make this consideration too, of what are the most important things? Like, what are worth the management you have to do to make that thing safe enough to bring into your home, or are you willing to do the storage and whatever, storage fees or, facilities look like to be able to keep those items separate from you, but in your possession? What would be worth it for you? And for me, it turned out to be paperwork like my birth certificate and social security card, but then also a baby blanket. Like I'd had it with me ever since I was a baby, and I just felt like this huge amount of loss not having it with me. And so, objectively, should I have brought that baby blanket to Colorado? No, it's not something that is needed, but like I needed it emotionally. And so it became worth it to me.
Beautiful example. And the next topic is diet. And I know that we've just did an episode all about diet, so you can definitely check that out if you want to dive into, the benefits of carnivore versus the low amylose and all that fun stuff. But it is worth noting that there are a lot of people in that have healed from SIRS in the past that did not do carnivore. And so take that for what you will. If carnivore is very, very difficult for you, it's not this like prerequisite to healing on SIRS. That said, as JC and I have both experienced, going carnivore or very meat heavy in our diets is usually it usually brings us the other benefits of a lot of our symptoms going down and feeling a little bit better. I know that if I ever go off carnivore, my joint pain comes back. I have more of the morning, like back pain and stiffness. Little things like that pop back up when I don't eat clean. So, again, that's letting life happen, letting yourself off leash, so to speak, and eat what you want on occasion for the mental benefits of that. But just know that if you do stay with a cleaner diet, and of course the recommended diet from Shoemaker Protocol is the low amylose, low mold type of diet. If you can stick to that, you'll obviously experience benefits from there.
And there are things you can do on the protocol itself to make things a bit easier. I would say, and this has been a trend we've seen a lot in the group recently, is people just feeling a little bit stuck, like they're spinning their wheels, they're not sure what to do next. And one thing you can do when you feel that way is get more information. If you haven't done the blood work yet, do the blood work. If you haven't done the environment testing yet, do the environment testing. And if you are on the protocol and you feel like you're hitting a stall and you're not sure what to do next, look into doing the GINI, which is the genetic blood test, to see what you are currently being exposed to, is one of the things, the pieces of information it can provide to you. Or you could do the NeuroQuant, which is going to show you more of like your historical biotoxin, or you could do both. And that will help a lot because then you don't feel stuck in this indecision. It's more of like, okay, I have more information, so you can start making better choices. Better meaning like more informed choices.
Yeah, I experienced that firsthand with taking the Genie test. And no, we're not sponsored by anyone associated with the Genie test. But what happened to me is that I stalled in my healing and I couldn't really figure out why. And so I finally decided to get the Genie test to see exactly what I was reacting to. Turns out it was endotoxins, very specific. I was able to narrow it down to that. So not mold, not actinos, wasn't Lyme, wasn't even COVID, even though I've had COVID in the past, but it was endotoxins. And so that led me to test my home for endotoxins. And I found out that the lower floor was higher than the upper floor, which was weird because the upper floor has carpet and I have dogs, so I thought the upper floor would be worse. And the outside was like non-existent. So I knew there was a problem inside my house. So that, again, narrowing it down, more tests, more data, a clearer path forward. Come to find out just this past week that I was passing the washing machine and it kind of didn't smell right. It was a little mildewy. And that smell, I think we ignored it probably for a week or two, thought, oh, it's just like needs to be dried out or something. Eventually, it was no longer something we could ignore. And we took it out, took it apart, and there was disgusting sludge, moldy, sewage smelling grossness inside. And so that is a situation where thankfully we were able to identify that, clean it all out, And I am now hoping that I'm going to be feeling quite a bit better now that that is out of my house. So again, I would not have, maybe I would have eventually noticed the mildew smell and would have gone that direction anyway. But to know for a fact that my body was reacting to endotoxins, it gave me something to look for and helped inform my own work on my own environment. So testing definitely helps.
And I know those tests are expensive. I don't want to invalidate that for anyone who's kind of sitting on the fence and wondering if that money will be worth it. But someone in the group said something really awesome on our last group call. They said they consider it an investment because once they get the Genie, once they get their NeuroQuant, then every decision they make from there is going to be more accurate than any decision they could have made before. And so it just helps you. It's about efficiency, right? Spending $1,000 on the Genie now might make your choices more directed so you don't waste money spinning your wheels looking into something else. You could have spent weeks cleaning your home for Actinos. You could have done the four deep cleanings. You could have hired professionals to help you. And all of that money would have just been not wasted. I'm sure it would have been good to have a super clean home, but it wouldn't have been, that money wouldn't have been going directly towards the biotoxin that you are currently being exposed to, being the endotoxins. So it does make your treatment much more efficient in the long run, even though it is a higher upfront cost.
And so, yet again, another thing to weigh for you and in that ideal versus not ideal, how much data is too much for you and what you're processing. Obviously, work with your practitioner on all of the above to find out what is best for you. And definitely explore things. If you feel very strongly about a test, go for it. There's a way to order all of these, I think on your own actually as well. So even if you're not working with a practitioner yet, you can go that direction. So we'll have links to everything in the show notes too, of course, so you guys can check it out and figure it out for yourselves.
And if you're looking for more resources and support on your STARS journey, you can join us over at thestarsgroup.com.
We'll see you there.